Pizza Noir by Denver Day, Book 1, Chapter 3. I guess the two main questions are, number one, what's her deal with Asian food delivery professionals? And two, when are you going to arrest her? Joe asked me. The air this 4 a.m., much the same as yesterday at 4 a.m. and every morning at 4 a.m. as I stand in the street, with our proximity to the ocean, to thank for the steadiness of this year-round pea soup. I considered my surroundings and Joe's question, as well as the also welcome perennials of his dry wit and coffee. The truth is, and he was probably right. No shit, Joe, no shit, I said. The lieutenant and I will talk to her tomorrow. I'm playing devil's advocate. It could have been a random end user burned on a drug deal. Or it could have been her new Asian delivery man. As her accessory, is the motive jealousy or dope or a combination of those? Wrap up the investigation from there. Then a judge for a warrant and probably wind up in a plea bargain. We might need extra popcorn, though, if it goes to trial, but I doubt that. Yeah, Joe. Yeah, probably a big old pot of all of the above gumbo. Airlock, huh? We used to call that a clusterfuck. Must be good pussy or good dope to drive those kids to blood like that, he said. He poured us each another styrofoam coffee. I'll stick to my coffee and my smokes. Nobody's ever tried to fillet me over either one, he grinned, yet. This from a guy who pours whiskey in his coffee before the sun is up. Granted, the sun doesn't come up much out here. Well, every day is Halloween for some people. I concurred. I finished my hot brown breakfast and headed to my apartment, hit the rack at the day's first light. I woke up Sunday morning and headed to the station about 9 o'clock, where, as usual, Lieutenant McKinney was already hours and hours and hours and hours into his daily rigmarole by the time I get there, different shifts, strung together by the ever-flowing coffee pot. Flow my coffee, the policeman said. I briefed him regarding the night before, warts and all, people living that hell-bent train of a lifestyle tend not to get hangovers. He said, that isn't the hair of the dog. They just wake up and eat the whole bloody beast all over again. So I imagine she won't rise and shine until noon at best. Let's go around lunch and catch her at breakfast. Again, I concurred. Knock, knock. Some commotion from within, some delay, some haggling with several paranoid door locks from behind the apartment door. Chinese takeout man emerged in his underwear. She never came home last night, he said, without being prompted. When's she due back? Lieutenant asked. Well, she's working tonight at 10. She'll probably stop by here at least to take a shower before she goes into work. Any idea where we might find her until then? No. Thanks anyway. Tell her I call if you happen to run into her. I gave him one of my cards. You may call me if you need to as well, I added. We headed to the hotel where last night's end run took place. I mentioned that I met a lady sax player. Don't shit where you eat, Ricky, the lieutenant answered. We pulled into the hotel parking lot, walked into the lobby, and of course the whole scene was night and day different from last night's brouhaha. And we nodded to the front desk staffer who was yakking away on a cell phone. As she glanced up at us, I rode the elevator up. Knock, knock, some delay. Some shuffling about from inside. The lock clicked. Came a woman's voice. Who is it? Detective Ricky Thompson with the state police, here to talk with Miss Carrie Anders. A moment. Another moment. Coming, Ricky. Be right there. Hang on. It was her. Lieutenant McKinney grimaced and muttered something about handcuffs and a body condom. She opened the door. Navy sweatpants, flip-flops, and a gray tank top. She was smoking a menthol cigarette, and the room was thick with crispy menthol fog. She looked relatively no more worse for the miles she put on the last 2 days, or for that matter, the last 12 hours, or for that matter, the miles I saw her clocking. My last shift at this point, literally, she was the only one left in the suite. Some party last night up here, I said to her. Thought we might find you here. We already tried your apartment. Oh, yeah, that's right. she screeched. I remember seeing you last night. Thanks for the big tip. That goes a long way. What resilience, I thought. She wasn't even limping. The lieutenant nodded and tipped his hat. Madam, we need to ask you some more questions about the death of your fiancé, Stephen Wang, and the two others who died with him. And we want to get to the bottom of this as much as you must do. May we come in? It was pretty itchy in there, but the menthol cloud mitigated it somewhat. Kind of like poison oak wood. She sat on the couch where she'd last night been so herself so heavily occupied. First, we want you to know that we're not so much worried about all this drug use insofar as it's a crime, per se. With all that, it's only relevant insofar as it's his relationship as evidence with respect to the murder of the girl, your Mr. Wang, and the other man, the lieutenant told her. Because we know that this sort of activity is unfortunately irreducible from your career choice and workplace setting. So, again, please know that's not what we're investigating here, Miss Anders. This is a homicide investigation, capitally. She considered this, and it might have made sense to her, with strippers like her, and those of similar stripes. The dynamic is often much like interviewing a child, however. Very early in my career, a county prosecutor related to me the general investigative watermark known as the Santa Claus Rule, colloquially speaking. That is, when interviewing juvenile witnesses for criminal investigations, the approximate benchmark for expecting credible statements from children falls approximately along the same threshold of whether or not they still believe in Santa Claus. As a general guideline, they shouldn't be expected to give useful, dependable court testimony or witness statements if they still believe in Santa Claus. The reasoning is that such a fantastic belief indicates the child's inability to dependably make objective determinations about the world around them. Furthermore, when a child suffers a traumatic incident or is severely victimized and the impact isn't psychologically stopped, lost, and resolved, then important parts of their development tend to stop right there at the moment of the trauma forever. And this seemed clearly the case with Ms. Anders, as is the case with so many people I come in contact with in my day's work. As having any sort of conversation with her made clear that something in her head had stopped growing at about the age of 8. In regard to certain other realms, her psychological maturity was shunted in early teens. And everything else upstairs had stopped progressing by the time she was 20 at best anyway. It's hard to know if individuals like this are following your forensic logic. That's the point I'm making. One of them. And frankly, it's impossible to know if coked up strippers are lying or not. Just as a general rule, because the integrity of his or her good work is not typically on top of a strung out person's list. After a certain point, terminal point. It's my estimation that your fiancé and the other two were killed when your fiancé was ripped off during a drug deal. I would say it's a situation that your new friend, the man who's at your apartment right now, should take care to avoid. And a situation of which you as well should be cautious. After all, you may be our only witness. Are you able now to tell me who did it? Now, she might offer a petty rival. She might claim not to remember. That would be plausible. She might even identify additional accessories. I looked over at the lieutenant. She considered the question for several moments. Looking back at me, she lit another menthol. Cool and minty. We were in the backstage area of the Squeeze Box Club. It was last call for the bar, and the girls were still rotating through the stage. But I was done for the night. Tipping out to the bar backs, about to head out to an after-hours party. Stevie showed up with my dinner and with some other stuff for some of the bar backs and the other girls, and that's when I heard a scream. It came from that girl. When I turned around, she was in the floor on top of a huge, like, dark spot. It was blood. The pizza Stevie brought for us was on the ground, I saw, and he and the other guy wrestling, like, with this, like, huge Latino guy covered in tattoos. But the huge guy must have known karate or something, she said. because Stevie had jumped on his back and was strangling him and kicking him with his heavy boots, but the guy just so big, he started ramming Stevie into the cinder block wall backstage like some kind of wild animal until Stevie finally just fell off in the floor. Then the guy grabbed the other girl's date by the arm and pulled him close and like bear hugged him. And then he slid off. He made a funny sound and fell down into a big dark spot on the ground. I thought I was next on his list at that point, so I just freaked out and ran out the back door, she said. I caught a ride to the party, she said, and came here. She gestured toward the couch she sat on. I kept waiting for Stevie to show up, but he never did, obviously. She said she vaguely recognized a large Latino man. Gave a name, Alvarez, having seen him around the clubs before. Alvarez, maybe, but that she didn't know his name and hadn't seen him since.